Welcome. How's the conference so far?
Good.
Good?
Good?
You're still eating. Okay. How many people here are engaged in a startup right now, today? All right. How many people are engaged and are thinking about being engaged in a technology startup, maybe a mobile app or a web application or some back-end data processing? Just about everybody, I think, is thinking about that. That's what I want to talk about today. I'm not going to go deep into technology, but I want to talk about some of the technology choices you have and how you come to those choices. Because startups are hard, and technology is hard. Not just because of the technology itself, but because there's a lot of decision-making involved in that. I work for a former technology startup, Microsoft, which got a lot bigger. My job, I actually have the coolest job title in the company. My title is, are you ready? Technical Evangelist. What that means is that I talk to people and I tell them, teach them about our platform. I help them build apps to that platform. I work with students. I work with startups. I have office hours once a month over at the Chicago Innovation Exchange on East 53rd Street. I love technology. I love sharing my ideas about technology. But it is hard. There's a lot of decisions to be made. You want to create a new startup, you need to think about how are you going to choose your technology. What operating system are you going to build it on? What tools are you going to use? What languages are you going to build it with? What database is going to be the back end? Are there any frameworks involved? Is it going to be a web app or a mobile app? Is it going to be a distributed application? Is it going to be both web and mobile? Who's going to host it? All kinds of questions you have to ask yourself. When I was preparing for this speech, I started thinking about when I was a consultant, because I was a software consultant for about 20 years. I had to come up with those same decisions or help my customers make those same decisions. And I started thinking about what are the criteria when somebody comes to you and says, we've got this awesome technology, you should use it. Just sprinkle a little bit of Java on your startup and everything will be wonderful. Little ASP.NET, MVC, makes everything better. It's really not like that. Technologies all have their own strengths, they all have their own weaknesses, and you need to think about what your goals are. So I started off with, of course, the obvious thing. Well, it seems obvious, you know, what this technology that I'm looking at, does it solve my problem at hand? And the reason I say that it seems obvious is because there's an implicit question that's not on here, which is, I need to know, before I can even answer this question, I need to know what is the problem that I'm trying to solve. So I need to take a step back and think about what the priorities are for the application or for the product, for the service that I'm building. Do I want it to be the fastest product on the market? Is speed the number one priority? Do I want it to be extremely reliable so I have 100% uptime? Nobody ever has to go to my website and see where that is down? Do I want concurrencies so that multiple people can access at the same time? Maybe I want high scalability. I expect this thing to grow and take off and have millions of users like Facebook or Twitter or something like that where people are hitting it from all over the world. I need to be able to handle that. But, or maybe it's not always extremely popular, but maybe there are times when they're hitting it. I want to be able to handle that concurrencies because I'm selling concert tickets. And when Katy Perry tickets go on sale, all of her minions flock to the website and they're all going to buy her tickets for about 15 minutes and then they're sold out. So for that 15 minutes, I better be able to handle that load. Afterwards, I don't really care so much. There's a lot of things that I need to think about. Is that what's part? When somebody enters information in China, do I want that to be immediately available in the United States? These are all questions you have to ask yourself. It's easy to say, yes, I want all that. That's all our priority. If we had an infinite amount of money and we had an infinite amount of time, then sure, we could do that, but we don't have that. None of us has that. We have to prioritize. We have to think about what are the problems we're trying to solve, and then wherever this technology is coming from, talk to people who are using it and say, this is my number one priority. This is my number two priority. Think about that. What does that solve? And then, of course, the contrast of that is, are there any flaws in that application, that technology that I'm using, that'll prevent me from meeting those goals? If there are things that just don't work well in a technology, that might not be a deal killer. Maybe they don't work well in areas I don't care about, or maybe I can enhance that with some other technology and bring that in. If it's slow, maybe I can bring in some caching and add that and make up for my architecture. Just be aware of those things. Cross-platform is a good question. A lot of people, who here is building a mobile application? a few people. So the, one of the questions you have to ask yourself is there's a very fragmented mobile space out right now. A few years ago, iPhone was the dominant smartphone player in the world, but that isn't true right now. Android outsells iPhone by quite a bit. Microsoft, the company I work for, has invested a lot into the Windows phones, and so it looks like this isn't going to change. There isn't going to be one player who's going to rise up and just take over the market. And so you've got some choices. If you want to target, create a mobile application, do you want to write it just for one platform? Do you want to write just iPhone applications and ignore everybody else? And some people do that. That's okay. Do I want to write it multiple times? I'll write one version for Windows, one for iPhone, one for Android. And people do that. That's a lot of work. It's essentially triple the work. Or one thing that's emerged in the last few years are cross-platform tools. And if you're building a mobile application, you should at least be aware of the fact that cross-platform tools exist. What a cross-platform tool allows you to do is to write code one time and then compile it down so it runs on each of the operating systems. Probably the most popular, the most common one is a tool called PhoneGap. PhoneGap is an open source tool, it's available for free, and you can write your code in JavaScript, and it will compile down to iPhone, Android, and Windows. It's really a nice tool. There are things that maybe it won't handle well, because there may be things on Android where you have to access the camera or the accelerometer in a particular way. You may have to write a little bit of custom code in those edge cases, but by and large it works really well. Well enough that some companies have built commercial products on top of PhoneGap that add extra functionality to it. There's another one called Ionic, also JavaScript-based. It's based on the Angular JavaScript framework. You can write code in JavaScript and push a button and basically compile it down to multiple platforms. This saves a lot of time. You don't have to, it essentially saves about 67% of your time. You don't have to write your applications three times. Just in the last couple of weeks, Microsoft purchased a company called Xamarin, which is also a cross-platform tool. In that case, with Xamarin, you write your code in C#. It's the same idea. You write it one time, and it compiles down to all three platforms. These are things to look at if you're building an application. Think about the cross-platform start. Think about the platforms that you care about. Do you want to target all of the mobile devices, or just one platform, or just two? Cost, of course, is a factor. There's a lot of commercial software out there that has a price tag associated with it. There's a lot of free software out there. Free software is produced by people that are not in the business of starving to death. They have revenue models. They open source or free software is supported by a revenue generating company that'll charge for their consulting services. Look at the cost. It's a factor, but look at the entire cost over the life cycle of the application. And then this is one that I think a lot of people ignore. If you've got a development team on staff already, or if you are a developer, what are your skills? What are you proficient at right now? So if I am a rock-solid Ruby on Rails developer, maybe it makes sense for me to build my application on Ruby on Rails. Maybe that's the best solution for me. Maybe not, but if there are other tools out there that are just slightly better, but it's going to take me 2 months to ramp up or to ramp up my team to that skill set, that's a lot of cost in training time. Think about what the skill set of your developers are. And that should be a big factor in what you're going to do. It's easy to say, I want the best of breed, I'm just going to choose the best solution. But if you've got skills in-house, that should be a big factor. Not the only factor, of course. Now, some of you don't have any development team on staff already. You just have the idea, and you're starting to ramp up your development team. So this part of it might be maximum flexibility. I don't have development skills at all. I'll tell you what, my office hours, one of the most frequent questions I get is, where do I find developers? This is a big challenge for startups. And I never heard this question until I started hosting office hours, and so I've got the answer to it. What you want to do, this is obvious, of course, you want to go where the developers are. And there's a lot of really good places for that. Right here at the University of Chicago, there's a weekly hack night. On Friday nights, the computer science department, they reserve a room. I think every other week it's at Ryerson Hall, and then every other week it's the Chicago Innovation Exchange. They buy some pizzas. People just bring their laptops and they hack. And if you're interested in hiring some developers, that's a great place to find them. Just go there, walk around, see what people are hacking on. If you think, well, I really could use a good Python developer, find somebody that's working in Python and talk to them. Find out what their skill sets are. There's user groups and meetups, they're essentially the same thing. User groups I've been going to for years, long before I joined Microsoft. I used to run a user group back in the Detroit area. I used to live right there. And we would host monthly meetings, and we'd invite a guest speaker in, and he would talk about some piece of technology. That happened to be a .NET user group. So we would talk about things related to .NET development. And it was a great chance to learn something new from the speaker. It was a great chance to meet other people in your field. And we always provided dinner for the attendees. Usually it was pizza or something like that. But it's also a great place to hire people. Because in this business, in the software business, people tend to change careers about every 3 years. So if you go to these user groups and you're looking to connect with somebody that you'd like to hire as a software developer, user groups tend to be narrowly focused. There are user groups on JavaScript development, or Node development. There are user groups on Amazon Web Services and iOS development, .NET, Azure. And so this is really targeted marketing. If you're looking to hire people, everybody there is essentially your target market. Everybody that's in attendance there is there because they're passionate about that technology. So it's a great way to connect with people, meet people. Here's a tip. If you buy them pizza, your credibility goes way, way up. Developers love free pizza. Show up there, talk to the user groups. They're always looking for sponsors. They're always looking for somebody to help buy food and offset the cost of the meetings, because they have to pay for the meeting space. And for a small contribution, you know, what does pizza cost? About $5 or $7 per person. That's really targeted marketing. You put a billboard up on the highway, one out of every 1,000 people that sees it is actually target market. You put a commercial on television, one out of every 5,000 people might be your target market. You go to a user group, one out of every 1 person is your target market. Really targeted advertising now. And usually they'll let you stand up and talk about it. Same thing with code camps and conferences. Code camps are just conferences that are run by volunteers. A little bit like this one. There are conferences that are built around specific technologies. Go to the one. There's one at the end of the month at the Illinois Institute of Technology, the Chicago Code Camp. It's a free conference. A lot of recruiters there. Some of them will be sponsoring. Some will be just walking around and meeting people. Go on there and talk to developers. Find people that are passionate about what the skills that you're looking for. One out of every 3 of them is looking for a job, right, on average, every year. Here's another question about where does your app run? If you're an application, you need to think about, is it going to run, is it going to be a mobile app, run on a phone, is it going to run on a desktop, is it going to be in a web browser, is it all back-end data systems where it's going to run in some hosted environment, like in a cloud? Maybe it'll be a combination of all those things. These are questions that you'll need to ask yourself, and which technology you use will be a big part of that. Pop lights is here. All right. So all these technologies here, they'll be. You can choose one. Choose one, pick it, run with it. The cost of picking the wrong one is pretty low if you keep your architecture modular. And what I mean by that is if you build your application in such a way that the pieces of it are easily replaceable. So once you start building this thing out, you can build one monolithic code base. You can have your people build one model of code. But think about the fact that at some point you may say, you know, speed was important to me originally, but now scalable. This thing is popular, and this technology I used isn't scalable. I need to swap out the database technology for something more scalable. And think about what you're building, and make sure that there are clearly defined boundaries of where those are, so that if you do need to change technology, you don't have to wipe out the entire application. You can pick and choose the parts of it that are not medium needs, that are slower, that are not scalable, or aren't handling concurrency, right? Whatever your goals are, because those goals might change over time. And then the corollary of this is you want to stay agile. And agile means a lot of things to a lot of people. For me, agile is all about getting constant feedback from the users, rapid feedback from the users. You've heard this before. Get your minimum viable product to market as quickly as possible. Don't build everything. Don't spend 2 years building everything and then ship it. Build something small with some key features and give it to your users, or give it to maybe just some people you trust and say, here's what I have. What do you think? What do you love about it? What do you hate about it? What would you add to it? And they may tell you that feature that you absolutely thought was going to be the awesome, most awesome thing in the world, they may say, you know, I don't really care about that at all. That's really no use to me at all. But it's missing this other feature that I would love, and it might be one you haven't thought about at all. So staying agile both with your technology and with your products, for me it means building something and releasing updates off of it and getting that feedback, encouraging your users to get feedback. Keep that alive during the startup phase, during your beta phase. Keep it alive during this whole cycle of your product. Things change. That's the one constant of technology. Everything changes. All right, I mentioned cloud computing a couple times because I think it's really important for the future of technology. And I think it's really particularly important in startups. You have a choice when you deploy your applications. You can, if you've got some processes that need to run, not on the user's device, but in some external environment, maybe a web application, maybe some data you need to store that's shared among all users, you've got choices. At a high level, you have a choice of hosting that data and those applications yourself or having somebody else host it for you. And I would strongly recommend, in most cases, have somebody else host that for you. Hosting it yourself is much higher startup costs. You've got to buy some hardware, you've got to maintain that hardware. When it wears out, you've got to replace it, or when it breaks down, you've got to replace it. When the software has patches, you've got to manage that. That's a lot of work, and it's probably not your core business. You're much better off letting somebody else do that. In the long run, it's almost always cheaper. That's not universally true if you already got an existing data center, but I wouldn't throw it away. But if you're just starting up, chances are you've got better things to spend your money on than buying a data center. So you can host some of these things in some of the traditional hosting environments like GoDaddy or something like that. And that's okay, that works fine for simple websites. But for something more complex, I would look at cloud computing. Cloud computing is another one of those terms that's thrown out a lot. It's become kind of a marketing term. So I want to give you my definition of cloud computing. Cloud computing is when you take some or all of your application or your data and you have some third party host that in a highly scalable, highly reliable way. That's cloud computing in a nutshell. It's a pretty broad definition, but that covers the major cloud computing players. It certainly covers Azure, which is Microsoft's cloud computing platform, but also covers Amazon and Google's cloud and Heroku and several other ones as well. So what do I mean by that? Well, there's a couple things. I want to start with some definitions here. Cloud computing is a really broad term. So I have this chart here which breaks it down into, this is not cloud, this is when you buy your own data center. You buy your servers, you install everything on there. Install the operating system, you install your software on there, you install your applications, you put your data on there, and then it's yours. You have to maintain the whole thing. And this is what I'm saying. For almost everybody, I wouldn't do that. Not starting out. This is infrastructure as a service. This is we just virtualize our machines and we store them by a cloud provider. So we have an operating system, and we have a virtual computer, but we're not managing it. Somebody else is managing it. It's in a data center somewhere controlled by Amazon or Microsoft, and they're taking care of making sure that the hardware is up to date, not failing. They're monitoring it, make sure the power is plugged in, the room is air conditioned, all that stuff. But it's your company's responsibility to manage that operating system and patch it when security patches come in and install things like that. That's less work than this, but if we take it a step further, we can use platform as a service. Platform as a service says not only is the cloud provider going to give you a virtual machine, but they're going to actually provide that virtual machine. They'll install the operating system, they'll keep that operating system up to date for you, and they will just expose to you some services that you can use. For me, this is the sweet spot for startups. This is platform as a service, people call it PaaS. The PaaS story says that I don't have to worry about managing servers at all. I just have to connect to services. If I want a database, I can say, turn on this database feature, create some tables, and start accessing that data. I don't have to worry about hiring a DBA, managing clustering, and having failover setup. All the things that, again, are not part of your core business, let somebody else handle that. And you focus on the structure of the data, and writing the data, and reading from the data, the things that are important to your business. That's platform as a service. It doesn't have to be databases. It can be web applications. I don't care about the underlying web server. I just want to create a brand new web application and deploy my code to it and have it start running, connect it to a back-end database somewhere. I want to turn on caching. I want to turn on machine learning and use the tools of machine learning without having to worry about what's under the hood. I want that all abstracted away from me. Focus on the things that are really important to your business. PaaS lets you do that. And there's another layer even above that called SaaS, Software as a Service. This is stuff where you really hardly have to do anything. You just connect to it and start using it. These are things like Gmail, Office 365, Dropbox. You don't write any code. You hardly do any configuration at all. You just turn it on and it starts working. And you know, some days you'll go to your Gmail account and like, whoa, there's a new feature. How did that get there? Well, it's there. It's just a service. You're just using it. It's available. And that's Software as a Service. For things like OneDrive and Dropbox, or there's a lot of things you can use. If you can tap into this, great. By all means, use them as part of your software. But for custom applications, generally this is the sweet spot right here. Build things in there. And platform service. There may be that there are services that aren't available on the cloud platform you've chosen. They might not be there. And if you can't find that service available, like for example, Azure has really good support for Java applications, .NET applications, Python applications. It doesn't have Ruby on Rails. If you really want to have a Ruby on Rails application, you can always deploy to Azure. You can deploy a new virtual machine and just install Ruby on Rails. These are options. But I would look here first before I'm moving down. In fact, I would look here first and then move to the left. What happens is you've got less work over here, but you have more control over there. Down there, you can tell what brand of network card I want to use if you're doing everything yourself. Let's see. One other thing I want to talk about cloud computing is a term called elasticity. And elasticity is it means the ability to respond to changes in demand. And this is a big deal. This is a big advantage of cloud computing. I've got a little picture here of this blue line that represents some sort of demand. Maybe it's thousands of users or hundreds of thousands of users, and time along the bottom. I have it in months, but it could be days or minutes, whatever. The point is that demand of your application is not constant over time. Some days it's really heavy demand, some days it's really light demand, some hours it's real heavy, some of it's just not. The concert ticket example is a good one. I used to do a lot of work for Best Buy. Best Buy they literally do 80% of their business between Thanksgiving and New Year's. Really about a 6-week period where they do all of their, they make all their money. And they've got to decide, what do I buy? Do I buy enough servers to handle this maximum capacity? Like this. This is represents the maximum capacity. If they do that, well, these servers, they have to pay for them. They're sitting around all the time, just being wasted most of the time, just to meet that one brief period when demand is high. They could say, well, let's just average it out, in which case there's still some waste. But even worse than that, they don't do this. They've never done this. Worse than that, there's lost opportunity. They need to make money. That's how they pay the bills. Whatever money Best Buy spends the rest of the year, they make it Christmas time. And it's not just Best Buy. It's Domino's Pizza uses Azure, and they're on Sundays in the fall are huge pizza business days. People order lots of pizzas on Sundays in the fall because that's when the football games are on. People sit around and watch football and order pizzas. In fact, Super Bowl Sunday is by far their biggest year, their biggest day of any business. And it could be a application. There are a lot of applications for building something, maybe a payroll application for businesses, maybe Friday afternoon, so you're going to get really hit really hard and be not much going on the rest of the week. Or maybe month end, be lots of processing going on. You'll have this model. The shape will be different, but the more volatility, the more in your demand, the more cloud computing makes financial sense. Because what happens with cloud computing is something like this. Here's what ideally what you want to do. You'd want to say, all right, let's buy a server on Monday when demand is high and sell it on Tuesday when demand goes back down low. And when it goes back up on Friday, we'll buy 5 more servers. That's not really practical. It takes time to configure these servers. With cloud computing, you just rent these servers. You're just renting these processes. So when you need 100 servers, well, you can rent 99 more servers when demand goes up, when YouTube comes to town. And when 20 minutes later, when demand goes back down, we'll scale them back. We'll only use 1 or 2 servers because we don't need that demand. We don't want to pay for that extra demand. And this is the kind of flexibility. It doesn't have to be by month. It could be by minutes. You deploy these things out in a matter of 5, 6, 7 minutes and scale out in this way. This is a huge advantage of cloud computing. So once you start taking this into account, then cloud computing offers a much bigger advantage of buying your own servers. and even a bigger advantage over a traditional hosting that doesn't do this automatic elasticity. It's automatic auto-scaling. So think about this. Cloud computer providers off of it, Azure offers it, lots of other ones do. I want to talk a little bit about open source software, because open source is really popular, and it's another vague term that isn't easily defined, but it tends to be code that is released publicly, so you can actually look at the code and see how things are being built. It's collaborative with a lot of open source software. You can actually contribute back to it. So it's contributed not developed by just one company, it's developed by large numbers of people. And sometimes it's free. Not always, but sometimes it's offered free of charge. If it's sponsored by a company, generally they'll have some motivation behind it to get revenue a different way, sometimes through services. It's really kind of a nice offer. As distinct from companies that hoard their intellectual property. That's kind of a traditional model. Companies like Microsoft, and Oracle, and these big companies, there, IBM, would build software, and they wouldn't let you see the software, they wouldn't let you see the source code, they wouldn't let you see what they're doing. Every 3 years, they would just release a new version and say, here it is, if you want it, buy it, pay us, and give it to you. Open source kind of disrupted that model. And the reason I bring it up here is because Microsoft is embracing open source software, very much so. I want to make sure that I get this message out there, that's part of my job. Is that the days when Microsoft was one of those companies that would hoard all their intellectual property and keep it from you and not let you see how we're building things, those days are behind us, and we're making a much better effort to try to be more transparent, because we want to be more agile. We want that feedback from you. And there's three ways that we're doing that. One is Microsoft is contributing to open source software. So one of the largest contributors for the Linux kernel is Microsoft. Docker, which manages virtualization images, the fourth largest contributor to Docker, is a Microsoft employee. So we're doing a lot of work contributing to open source projects that are out there on the web. We've moved a lot of our own source code out to GitHub, because that's popular in the open source community. And along that line, we're releasing a lot of our software that we've traditionally held internally and that we've not let anybody else see until it's released. We're now releasing the source code. We're releasing it out as open source. If you go to GitHub, you can see things like the C# language specification. You can see our web platform, ASP.NET. It's all available on open source. You can see the Roslyn compiler. Compiler is a service that's available on GitHub. You can look at the source code and actually see how things are done. If you find bugs, you can log them on GitHub and get them back to us. Or you can find bugs that other people logged in. If you're really motivated, you're really technical, you could fix those bugs, and it may end up back in the product. This is a major shift in the way that companies like Microsoft are doing business. And then the third one, which I think affects you guys the most, is that Azure, our cloud computing platform, has a great deal of support for open source technology. So if you wanted to build a platform as a service that used MongoDB, or that used you wanted to create a virtual machine that ran Linux, these are things that have absolutely nothing to do with Microsoft. If you want to build a web application that ran PHP, it had a MySQL backend, these are open source tools. They have nothing whatsoever to do with Microsoft, but Azure supports them. And so we're making more of an effort to bring open source developers and open source users into our environment. Because the days when people would pick a technology stack are really behind us. It doesn't seem like it sometimes. Sometimes we hear people talk about the mean stack, or the LAMP stack. Mean and LAMP are acronyms that stand for the types of database, the type of web server you're using, and the type of languages that you're going to be using. Or the .NET stack, or the Java stack. Where you just pick a vendor and say, I'm just going to grab this set of technologies, and then I'm just going to use those. Those people don't do that anymore. People have their favorite database, they have their favorite language, they have their favorite operating system, and they combine them together. And that's fine. You can do that, but don't let that be a hindrance to the platform on which you're going to run your application. Certainly with Azure, you can run just about anything on it. So pick the technologies you want to use, but deploy them where you want to deploy them. And that's a big message that I'm trying to get at. So here's the things that are in Azure right now. Linux virtual machines, all sorts of open source technologies as service. If you want to run Redis Cache, for example, very popular open source caching technology. It's the caching technology that's sourced on Azure. If you want to build iPhone or Android or Ruby applications that run locally, you can do so and call out to some of the services in Azure because they're all exposed as web services. And web services, these are REST web services that are built on top of open standards like HTTP and JSON. And everybody can call those. So you can build services in the cloud and then call them from whatever devices, whatever languages, whatever platforms you want to. And you can do it for free. So this is, I've tried to keep this non-marketing. I do work for Microsoft, but I'm not a sales guy. I'm a teacher. This is the one thing that I'm going to try to sell you, but it's a free thing that I'm going to try to sell you. So if you're interested in the Microsoft tools or using some of them, or if you're interested in the Microsoft Cloud Platform and you're a startup, building a tech startup, then we have a program called BizSpark. And what BizSpark does is it gives you 3 years of free software and free cloud computing hours for qualified startups. When I say qualified startups, I mean a company has to be less than 5 years old, privately held, and earning less than $1 million in revenue, which if you call yourself a startup, that's almost certainly true. And you have to be engaged in creating a software product or a software service. And sometimes that's a hindrance. It's not for consulting companies. It's not for if you're selling life insurance, but you just want a copy of Microsoft Office. It's really if you want to use these to build a software product or a software service. It doesn't have to be a Microsoft service. It could be an iPhone app. That's perfectly fine. You can use the services in Azure for doing that. But this is the program that we have to alleviate some of the risks that the first couple you encounter in the first couple of years of startups. So it's not out of the goodness of our heart we're doing it. It's partly, we love people, but we're partly doing this because after those first couple years, we don't want the cost of software to be a hindrance to you when you're typically startups are cash strapped during that time. But eventually, a few of those startups are going to go on. They're going to create the next Facebook. They're going to create the next great thing, and we'd like that to be built on our platform. That's the reason that we're giving this stuff away for free is for those few people that are really going to build something awesome, and we don't want and it costs to be a barrier to that. So if you're interested in that, I'll be around here this afternoon. Come and talk to me, and I'll get you signed up for that. Forgive the commercial, but it's commercial for free stuff. There's really no catch to that at all. And my challenge to you is take what you're learning today and build on it. Build something awesome. Choose technology. Go out and engage the developer community and find great developers and build something awesome. And when you're done, tell me about it. I want to hear about it. I want to spread the word about it. I love talking about successful startups. I love talking about technology. This is me. Follow me on Twitter. There's my blog. I write about a lot of stuff, including startups, including cloud computing, including technology. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.